we're back. This is Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis. Thank you so much for joining us this morning at WAUK Radio, 540 AM, 101 FM. We're taking your phone calls this morning for the next 90 minutes or so, 844-967-2789. Our topic this morning is voting, polling, elections in America, prompted by this recent decision of the Wisconsin Supreme Court prohibiting the use of ballot drop boxes in our upcoming elections, August and November, and certainly beyond that, unless there's a change once again legislatively or in the judiciary in Wisconsin, and also by the decision by the United States Supreme Court to decide whether or not state legislatures are the exclusive places for making decisions about polling in America. A case called Moore versus Harper coming out of North Carolina, going to be decided by the Supreme Court sometime in the coming year. Right before the break, we were chatting about these Reconstruction post-Civil War amendments passed in our Constitution, 13, 14, and 15, that not only codify the prohibition on slavery in America, ensuring due process, equal protection, but most importantly, among these very important things, also ensuring that people of all races and colors and previous conditions of servitude, meaning slavery, have the right to vote, have the right to vote in America. And I was chatting before the break about the attempts by various jurisdictions throughout the United States, typically in the South, to try to roll that back, to try to impose burdens and hurdles to members of the population to vote in America, those kinds of things trying to be accomplished through things like poll taxes, requiring payments to vote, literacy tests, property ownership requirements, all sorts of things. And so as a result of that, as a result of all of that history that followed what we thought might be the change in America, confirming once again that simply writing it down, even putting it in our Constitution, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to accomplish change. What happens is that there is a movement that continues throughout the early 1900s and eventually ends up in the mid-1960s, a whole series of significant legislation coming out of the Congress in 1960, the Civil Rights Act of 1964. We know about the Housing Act, that sort of thing, including the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And in 1964, some civil rights organizations, they were called the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, pushed for federal action, some specific things beyond the constitutional provisions to ensure that voting rights for racial minorities were observed for all jurisdictions, all places throughout the United States of America, and began to speak out, went to the President of the United States of America, discussions throughout the country, including in those places, typically in the South, but not exclusively, where there were still attempts to try to disenfranchise recently enfranchised black voters, people who had the right to vote under the Constitution, and yet efforts being made to push that back. And in 1965, a fellow named Martin Luther King Jr., one of his colleagues named James Bevel, and other civil rights leaders began to organize some peaceful demonstrations to underscore this need to implement those post-civil rights amendments to the Constitution in a real way. And during the course of their advocacy, specifically in Selma, they were violently attacked by police and white counter-protesters. And throughout January and February, those protests, they received an awful lot of national attention. And Martin Luther King and other protesters were arrested in February, various events again in February, throughout that month and following. And throughout this period of time, Martin Luther King again advocating to the president and to others about this effort to try to ensure that the civil rights amendments are in fact enacted. Eventually, in March of 1965, those two organizations began the first of some Selma to Montgomery marches. Selma residents marched to Alabama's capital to articulate their grievances. And the first march, demonstrators were stopped by some state and some county police on horseback. It was called the Edmund Pettus Bridge. It's a place of horrific American history, still there in Selma, shoving tear gas into the crowd, trampling protesters. And this is known as Bloody Sunday, generating a huge amount of public attention to this whole issue. Three white Unitarian ministers who participated in the march were attacked on the street and beaten with clubs by Ku Klux Klan members. And the worst who were injured were a fellow named James Reeb from Boston who died. In the wake of those events in Selma, Bloody Sunday, President Johnson addressed a joint session of Congress in March of 1965 and called on legislators to do something, to enact some expansive voting rights legislation. And he concluded that very important speech in American history with the words, "We shall overcome," a major anthem of the Civil Rights Movement. And the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was introduced in Congress 2 days later. 2 days later after that, under the protection of federal troops, civil rights leaders then led a march of 25,000 people from Selma to Montgomery. So that's the generation, that's the backstory on the Voting Rights Act of 1965. I'm going to chat more about what that means today and what the Supreme Court has done in recent years to carve provisions of it away. Before we get to that, though, we're going to take some phone calls, including from Mark. Mark, thanks for calling in this morning as we chat about voting rights in America.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking my call. That it's kind of sad we have a Supreme Court that is willing to carve away voting rights we thought were firmly established. How they can possibly do this and claim to be holding to the Constitution. These guys are supposedly conservative, believing that this, what the written word, but they're ignoring the written word of the Constitution.
And Mark, I think you're right. And that's the specific force of our discussion this morning, the basis we're going to chat about in connection with what has happened, not to the Constitution, but frankly to the Voting Rights Act itself. And I appreciate your comment just because it leads well into our discussion of what happened in the wake of Bloody Sunday, the marches in Alabama, and the President Johnson's call to the United States Congress to pass a Voting Rights Act. And we're not going to get into all the legislative history, which I suspect you know well, Mark, and others out there. But what we do know is what happened in 1965. The Congress did, in fact, implement the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And we're going to chat this morning about two very specific components of it. It's enforcement procedures and the ways in which then the United States Supreme Court in recent years has carved those out, as Mark just said, has compromised, if you will, the capacity of the United States Department of Justice and others to enforce voting rights in America. So what does the Voting Rights Act say? What does the Voting Rights Act of 1965 provide as ultimately reversed in many ways by the United States Supreme Court? Well, there are, again, two principal focuses of it. You've got Section 2, its key features, the key features of the Voting Rights Act that, again, come out of this advocacy in 1965. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act prohibits state and local governments from establishing any voting law that discriminates against racial or language minorities. You may think, well, gee, doesn't the United States Constitution already say that? And the answer is, sure it does. Of course it does. This is enacting legislation to ensure, to make it clear to all of those jurisdictions out there that you can't do this. You cannot disenfranchise people, specifically people of color, specifically our black populations, from voting. You can't impose impediments to it through poll taxes and literacy taxes and other prohibitions that would prevent people from going to the polls. Section 2, this very clear rearticulation of the right, you cannot do that. And then there are other specific mechanisms like literacy devices that were specifically identified in the legislation as being prohibited under the law. Those things, of course, not specifically identified in the constitutional amendments, but nonetheless made clear in this legislative piece that you can't do this as a government in any state, any jurisdiction, any county, any municipality in the country. And then also, as I just indicated, providing that the principal enforcement mechanism under the Voting Rights Act is the United States Department of Justice through civil actions in federal district court. That's Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, a very important provision because it's the key to everything that comes after this, right? That's the basis upon which we can go into court, the Department of Justice, and say, you know what? This particular piece of legislation has got to be enforced in a jurisdiction that is not following it. it gives the authorities in the Department of Justice the right to make that argument to federal district judges. When we come back right after the break, our last moments of this hour, we're going to chat more about Sections 4 and 5 of the Voting Rights Act. And then in our next hour, chat about the ways in which the United States Supreme Court has compromised the capacity to enforce the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Join us. Continue to have this discussion right here on WAUK, the Shaw in downtown Waukesha, Wisconsin. We'll be right back.